Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Chatting with Sherry. Today I have the delightful Emmy-winning, award-winning writer Brooks Watchell. He's going to talk about a lot of diverse subjects, including his book, his writing for screen and television and documentary. Welcome, Brooks.
Hello, Sherry.
Hi, back to the show.
Well, thank you for having me back again. I thought you would have learned the first time.
You know, you were fun, and I love that.
Well, I had a great time, too, and let's do it again.
Yeah. For the people who weren't able to hear about you the first time, why don't you tell them a little bit about yourself, and then we'll go more into the questions.
Oh, God, the bio. The dreaded bio.
Yeah, the short one.
The short bio. I'm a writer.
Yeah.
That short? Maybe a little more.
A little bit more.
I've had a long career mostly in television. I've written over 100 episodes of various animated shows. Also, I've done documentaries for the History Channel. I'm just about to come out with my first novel. And let's see, I'm a magician and work with the Writers Guild trying to better animation writer and animation writers a lot and things like that. How's that? Is that enough of a bio?
That's good.
Or as we like
good.
To say... I'm unemployed in a dozen fields.
Yeah, that I understand.
the old joke, I have an international agent, I'm out of work all over the world.
Yeah, that's even better. Would you like to tell them a little bit about your documentary that just won awards at the festival?
Yes, it's a documentary I co-wrote and co-produced with Cynthia Harrison, who directed, and Cynthia and I have been partners for a long time. Going back to animation, we worked together on going back to the old Spider-Man animated show, and we did a lot of documentaries for the History Channel. We co-created a show called Dogfights way back when the History Channel was interested in history. And recently we did an independent, Cynthia found the subject, short documentary called Silver Tsunami. And Silver Tsunami is about the baby boomers, of which I am one, and the crisis that the vast numbers of aging baby boomers are going to eventually cause with health care and the economy. I mean, it's quite an amazing story because there's never been a demographic like this. I mean, as we point out in the documentary, this is the first time in human history that there's more people in the world over 65 than under 5.
Wow.
And we are living longer. We have a longer lifespan, but we don't have a longer health span. And that gap between health deteriorating and eventual demise eats up a lot of resources. So this is about trying to increase health span as well as lifespan. It's a fascinating subject. It actually covers history and economics and science and health. And the documentary, we won an award at the Awareness Film Festival. We premiered at Dances with Films. And at the end of the month, we're going to be at the Sonoma Film Festival. And then next month, we're going to be at the Tiburon Film Festival. So it's really quite an amazing short film, and I'm very proud of it.
Yeah, from the little preview I got, it was fascinating. I mean, I want to see the whole thing.
Well, for the listeners, go to YouTube Silver Tsunami Movie, and just make sure you include movie, otherwise you'll get a stripper named Silver Tsunami. That's not our show.
Well. I actually have a
Silver Tsunami movie
right on
YouTube, and you'll see our trailer. And go ahead.
I have a link on right on our Chatting with Sherry page. You just click right there, and it'll take you right to it.
Yes, it's really an amazing story, a scary story, and something that affects all of us. Because even if you're not in that demographic, you may be taking care of someone that is. So.
Mm-hmm.
Take a peek. We can do something to change. this catastrophe that looms before us, but it's going to take medical research and awareness.
What if you're a baby boomer that's under 65?
Well, eventually, with luck, you will reach 65. I mean, the baby boom generation, you know, I mean, you're talking about 1946, 63 or something like that. Anyway, I used to have the number memorized, but it covers quite a span.
Because I think it goes to 64, right?
Yes, I think you may be right. So that's a lot of people.
Yes. That's three wars. No, two wars. It's World War II and Korea.
When the World War II was over before the official baby boomer count. Korea and the start of Vietnam and, you know, it's a lot of history. So
there's a lot of history there, yeah.
Anyway, I really recommend everyone take a peek, not just because I want them to see the film Cynthia and I did, but because it's a really important subject.
Yeah, and healthcare is so touchy, and you know, it's so difficult because even with the covered California and all the different kinds of things, it still seems to me to be based on priority. There's still like money involved, and it's still hard. You know, it's not like, oh, healthcare is for everyone. Healthcare still isn't.
No, it isn't, and a single-payer system would have been better, though. I must say the documentary isn't about healthcare per se, as health research. The idea was, and now we can wrap up Silver Tsunami, because this is a really important point. Science was looking at all the diseases you get in old age separately, and science then started to ask, what do all of these diseases have in common? And what they had in common was you get them when you're old. And now they're starting to look at the aging process itself as the catalyst that spurs all these diseases, sort of going after the archer, not the arrow.
But
funding has been cut, and it's important that it's restored or even augmented.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's going to get worse before it's better.
Yeah. So go see the film.
Okay. And you also did, you mentioned to me about a documentary you did on Hollywood High.
Oh, yes, I put that on my YouTube page today. I'm a Hollywood High alum, and four of us, my friend Dan Doyle, Hillary Thompson, and Lois Lillybridge, got together years ago, and we did a documentary on the 100-year history of Hollywood High, which was an amazing history, not only for the amount of illustrious alumni that went there, but it's the history of the city of Hollywood. And we did this feature-length documentary. We made 1,000 copies, gave it to the school, and they used it to earn money for scholarships. And we've earned, I think, near $20,000 just in scholarship money when they sell this film. And
yeah,
to pay us back,
a lot
they
of
need
great
the member
actors.
Of the alumni board, so no good deed goes unpunished.
There's a lot of great actors, Debbie Reynolds, Stephanie Powers, a lot of people who went to Hollywood High.
Stephanie Powers is in the documentary. She talks about when she was a student there, a woman who really champions the natural world and saving the planet. And when she was a student there, she cut down a tree. Which, at the 100-year anniversary, she replanted.
Aww. That's so sweet.
So we have footage of that and an interview with Stephanie Powers and Annette Fabre and so many people. Carol Wells, Ruta Lee, former Secretary of State Warren Christopher, he's interviewed. I mean, it's a wonderful document. You have to go to the school to get it. But anyway, we've been raising a lot of money for scholarships.
That is so cool. I met Stephanie at a collectible show, and at the time they were going to tear down the Hollywood sign and put the area for to make housing or something, and we were talking about how stupid that is, and we were having this really animated discussion, and then people came to get her autograph. I go, oops, sorry, because we were having a really good talk.
Well, one of the things we did for Hollywood High, it was one of the first big buildings built in Hollywood, and the library, which was built as the auditorium, goes back to about 1906 or 1910. We've had it declared a historic landmark. We've got a historic status, which will help protect the place.
Yeah. Yeah, L.A. is kind of famous for knocking everything down. They don't really care if it's historic or not. You have to fight for to keep the history.
You certainly do. Unfortunately,
yep.
We have lost so much.
This is
the place where movies were born, and there's very little left of that early industry, very little physically remains of the early film factories.
The absolute horror I had when they were talking about how they basically just knocked down Charlie Chaplin's complete filmmaking compound to build a mansion. I was so angry. It doesn't make any sense to me. And it's like they don't have any kind of respect for what made that town.
No, they don't. They only have respect for money.
Yeah, sad. But there's so much history that was destroyed, like Chasen's and the Brown Derby. Sad. You see that stuff on I Love Lucy.
Well, oddly enough, the two you mentioned are preserved in some weird ways. Chasen's became a market, and they preserved part of the building and a little part of the dining room. And the dome of the Brown Derby was moved to the second floor of a shopping center without the rim of the hat. So they were in weird ways preserved, but not in the way you mean, in the way we'd like.
Yeah. What shopping center?
It's on Wiltshire, where the Brown Derby used to sit, across from where the Ambassador Hotel used to be.
Oh, okay. Now I know where it is. I was like, I don't remember Brown Derby there at all. And I mean, I know that the building was there, but the actual derby, I didn't know that the hat. You said the brim is gone and just the top of it?
Yes, it's been moved to the second floor of the shopping center. It's almost unrecognizable.
Okay, that's probably why I didn't know.
Basically, it's a dome.
Ay, so sad. You're also, and I know it because you took a wonderful picture of me and Stephen Sayers, a great photographer.
Thank you very much. Well, I've been doing photography for many years. Years ago, I did a lot of photography, not just of headshots, but I was doing physique photography of lady bodybuilders and fitness women. And they made me a much better photographer because never take a bad picture of any woman who can bench press you.
That's a good philosophy, Brooks.
It has served me well through life. And any woman who can bench press you, it just helps keep you healthy. And I have just been partnered with my friend Tom Conkle, who's a terrific writer, actor, producer, and he has a studio. We did some pictures there with my friend Mindy Miller, and we got along so well, and the pictures came out so well, we decided to go into business. And it's a great studio, and he's wonderful with lighting, and Mindy is wonderful with styling and makeup. So we have a company called Enveloping Light Photography, and I think you can find us. You can reach us at enveloping light@gmail.com, and we're launching a Facebook page so you can see some of our work. So we're going to be doing headshots.
That is so cool.
And we have backdrops and also a really big green screen. So if you want your headshot to have a background of, you know, any exotic place, real, imagined, past, present, or made up, we can do it.
That is so cool. That's a great thing. Give me the information and I'll put it on my blog.
I will send it to you.
Thank you. And we are at the halfway mark, so I want to give you plenty of time to talk about your baby, your book, Lady Sherlock, Circle of the Smiling Dead.
Yes, it's a book. I'm finishing it up now, hopefully. It's going to be published by Wordfire Press with Kevin Anderson's company. And I have one of your guests, Peter, I have one of your guests, Stephen Sears, to thank. He introduced me to one of the bigwigs at Wordfire that he's working with, a wonderful writer named Peter Wax. And Peter's working with Stephen Sears, and they introduced me, and Peter read some of the book and then surprised me amazingly by saying they'd like to publish it. So
wow.
What could I say? But hell yes.
Peter's been on my show, too.
they're wonderful, smart, funny, engaging people. And they assigned me the editor I really wanted to work with, a really bright lady named Sherry Goodhart, who's an incredible writer, award-winning writer on her own. Probably have her on your show. And she's working as my editor, and we are working away finishing the book. So it's about a lady Sherlock Holmes in 1906, a very chauvinistic era.
Yes.
And a plot that might be a supernatural curse, or it might be something much bigger that would have a world war as the outcome.
Wow. It sounds really cool. When is it going to, do we have a date yet?
Tentatively this summer. I mean, I keep mentioning a date and it keeps getting pushed back as we keep working on it. But I think we are looking at around July. Maybe in time
July.
For Comic-Con. So if it's out by July, maybe we will push, do some little promotion of some kind at Comic-Con.
Cool.
You know, Comic-Con, where 300,000 of your friends congregate in one overpriced hotel city.
Where I live.
You're lucky. You don't have to pay $400 a night for a hotel. And I used to live there. My father was a career naval officer, and I lived in Coronado for 7 years.
Oh, I love Coronado. It's one of my favorite places.
Mine, too. But I tell you how long ago it was. When I lived there, there was no bridge.
Oh, my God, really? Did you
have
to take the, what do they call it, the sand strip to, you drive all the way around almost to Mexico?
No, you could take the Silver Strand, or you could take a ferry. They had car ferries that went from Orange Avenue right to Harbor.
Oh, yeah, they talked about that. One of the ferries is now in San Francisco.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I mean, it's one of the few places where, to get from your little town to downtown San Diego, you not only got a sea voyage, but the possibility of sinking.
Well, one thing that they have here that they don't have in L.A. is really great public transportation. They have the trolley system, which basically takes you almost everywhere but Balboa Park.
But we're getting better in L.A. with public transport.
Yeah, the subway and the orange line and green line.
I mean, could we have a system?
Go ahead.
We have a system. The first part of the system was ripping out the most extensive public transport system in the world.
The trolley, the original trolley.
The red cars and the Pacific Electric.
Yep.
And then replacing them with freeways that became so crowded they became parking lots. And then slowly putting in, at enormous expense, a much smaller public transport line. It's a system.
Yeah. Kind of cockeyed, but it's a system.
And then making sure that more and more people move here so the system has become overloaded and inadequate. You have to plan this.
And it takes years.
It does, to make sure that no one gets anywhere in any hurry. And when they arrive, they're in such a bad mood that they forget why they wanted to come there in the first place.
True. My home, so I'm very familiar with what Brooks is saying.
Anyway, I hope you'll all get Lady Sherlock from Wordfire Press when it comes out. I think it's illustrated. There's lots of pictures in it. So if you aren't comfortable with words, just look at the pictures. But hopefully you'll like both.
I hope you like the words, too. My listeners like words.
No, I think they will. It's done very much in the style of a novel of the period.
I love that. I mean, I'm a huge Sherlock Holmes fan, so I'm looking forward to reading it.
Yeah, so I'm hoping I've captured the tone and style of a book from the turn of the century.
That'd be cool. Are you going to go to any of the steampunk conventions to promote it too?
I imagine we will. The book is not specifically steampunk, but I think they would find it very much up their alley.
Yeah, it fits the thought, the philosophy, especially because steampunk is really female-driven, and you have a female lead that will capture their little hearts.
I think so. It also is more in the nature of a historical novel in the sense that some real history intrudes into the plot, or maybe intrudes isn't the right word, but is germanic to the plot. So it sort of straddles all of that.
Yeah, I just was talking to a friend of mine who's a steampunk writer, and I was mentioning your book, and he said, oh, that would fit in. Have him come down to our, because there's a convention, I think, sometime in July here for steampunk. So maybe you can come for both Comic-Con and the steampunk convention.
I would love to, and I think the steampunk community would very much like the book.
Yeah.
And I'm a huge H.G. Wells, Jules Verne fan.
Yeah, me too. I mean, Time Machine was the first science fiction novel I ever read.
And you know there's several versions of that.
I know, but I was sort of shocked when my dad gave me the book, and it was so thin. Because I saw the movie, and I really wasn't expecting it to be this tiny little book.
Well, it's a novella, and it was originally published. To pad it out, the publisher put a catalog in the back of the book of all their other titles, so it would look thicker.
Oh, really? Because...
It came out in the United States and Britain at about the same time, and they were two different manuscripts with lots of differences.
What was the publishers of the two manuscripts, do you know?
I don't have them memorized offhand. I certainly could look it up on Wikipedia, which has all this information, but there was an American publisher and
no,
the British.
Okay.
And I used
to
know
that.
The names. As you asked, they escaped from my mind. It was his first
okay.
hit. It put H.G. Wells on the map.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Then,
I mean,
it was originally in a magazine, as a lot of novels were then, and there was a chapter that he wrote because the magazine publisher wanted it longer, and he took that chapter out of the book, and it was a chapter that bridged the era between the Eloy and the Morlock, and that beach he finds himself on millions of years in the future. So there's a missing chapter, which he published later.
That one I'd never heard of, because the book
you
I
can
have
find
is
it,
an older version.
You can find that missing chapter online. It's called The Gray Man or The Gray Men.
Yeah, I'll have to look that up. The other book that was tiny that I was stunned was a novella was A Christmas Carol.
Yes.
Another book my dad gave me. I was like, oh my God. It's tiny. It's teeny tiny. It's hard. It's like instead of a novella, it's a nub.
And what do those two stories have in common?
They're written by really brilliant men that talk about the problems of their time and put it into periods or into fantasy so the public would eat it up without realizing they're being lectured to.
And they both deal with time travel.
Yep. Well, Christmas Carol is more magical, but...
It is, but there's time travel in it.
Yeah, they have the past. They have
the
Christmas past. Yep.
And future.
Oh, yeah, Christmas future,
the ghost
in his grave.
Not, yeah, that ghost that's not very chatty.
Yeah, he's quite quiet. He just points a lot. Well, we only have 5 minutes. Do you have any events? Yeah, it really went fast. Do you have any events or anything that are coming up you'd like the public to know about?
I don't think it qualifies as an event, but a show I worked on years ago is finally coming to DVD called Young Hercules. And
yeah.
It's part of the Hercules Xena universe. The DVD is coming out, I think, next month. And it starred Ryan Gosling in one of his first parts. I wonder whatever happened to him.
Yeah, I really do wonder.
We're planning a reunion at the Magic Castle. We're going to have lunch there and talk about all the fun we had writing the show.
Cool. Brooks is a magician, and he belongs to the Magic Castle. We don't have a lot of time. You want to tell about the Magic Castle, what you do there?
The Magic Castle is the world's largest private club for magicians. It's a wonderful, life-changing place. You meet amazing people there. I met Richard Sherman of the Sherman Brothers. And it's just a wonderful private club. You can come in on a guest card or with a member and see amazing magic. I have worked on the main stage there many years ago with my magic partner, Nina Poussette, who's now doing really impressive writing work. And we had an act called Brooks and Lena, or as she calls it, Lena and Brooks. And I think it was called Lena and Brooks. It was called Lena and Brooks because she's stronger than I am. But anyway, I mostly do close-up magic. I have quite a reputation in Europe doing magic, which is why I work here.
I've been to the Magic Castle several times. It's a lot of fun. If you ever are able to get a guest card, go. And they have amazing food, the best food.
And it has a strict dress code, so read the dress code. Otherwise, you can get in, but your clothes can't.
That would be pretty.
And let's see, I'm on my way to the Writers Guild of America because I'm on the Animation Writers Caucus, and it's a group that works to better the lot of animation writers in the industry, because most animation isn't covered by the Writers Guild, so alas, no residuals.
Which sort of really sucks, since that's like one of the most popular mediums there is.
And the most rerunnable. I mean, there aren't many 1960s sitcoms that are being run a lot, but the Flintstones are playing somewhere all over the world. Somewhere in the world, the Flintstones is running, even today, and those writers don't get residuals.
Yeah, the Flintstones and the Jetsons are pretty much equal to I Love Lucy.
Yeah, well, the I Love Lucy writers don't get residuals either.
But that's
a whole different story for another broadcast.
Well, we've come to the end. Thank you so much. I so appreciate you taking the time to chat with me.
My pleasure. It's always, always a delight to be on your show, and hopefully we will do it again.
I hope so. Thank you so much, Brooks.
Take care and be well.
You too. Thank you for chatting with Sherry.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.